Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
I want to tell you about someone I knew who refused to die. I first met this someone in the summer of 1995. He was short, he had brown hair, and he enjoyed licking his butt. He was a dog. He was my dog. He was a Beagle Springer Spaniel mix named Buster, and Buster refused to die. He defied death repeatedly. Like this one time, there was a knock on the door. Turned out somebody delivering a package. I opened the door, and Buster ran through, and he was not the type of dog who would come back if you called him, so I had to give chase, and so I started chasing him. The problem is that Buster, though he was small, was actually faster than he looked, and I am slower than I look. And so I start chasing him, and he kept running from me. I'm like, Buster, Buster, and he just kept running. And the problem was that he was getting closer and closer to the main road, which is where there was lots of traffic. And I thought, if he gets out there, we're in trouble. And so I kept calling him, and he kept eluding me and running from me. And finally, he got right by the road, and he squatted, and he started, you know, doing his business, and I thought, this is it, this is my chance, I'm going to grab him while he's in full squat, you know, and so I ran over to grab him. He saw me coming and started running from me again. As he ran, he continued to do his business, and so he ran out into the street kind of like this, and I'm like, weird, and he ran out, and I see cars coming, and he's right in the middle of the road, and I thought, oh, crap. Which seems especially appropriate now, considering what he was doing as he went out in the street. And I think I can best explain what happened next through some of the sounds I heard. Buster got on the road. There was a motorcycle coming, and he swerved around him at the last second. And then there was this car that was barreling down on Buster. And what I heard was the lady in the car scream. Like her windows were closed, but she screamed so loud. I heard her as she saw this dog in front of her. She went, ah! The next sound I heard was the sound of her brakes. The next sound I heard was her car hitting Buster. It sounded like the sound a linebacker makes when he makes a vicious tackle on a running back. It was like, foof. And the next sound I heard was came from Buster. And it was a sound that could only be made by an animal that truly belonged in the wild. As Buster flew through the air, he went, and land it. I thought, oh, that's it. He's dead. And I started walking over to get him off the ground when I saw something I could not believe. I saw a blur of fur because Buster jumped up and ran full speed right past me. And I'm like, how is he alive? And how is he running? And so he got past me and I went, Buster? And finally he stopped. And he looked at me, and of course, dogs can't communicate. But what I think he was saying through the look he gave me was, did you get the license plate number off of that car? Buster refused to die. Just refused to die. And in this new series we're starting today, I would like to propose this. Perhaps our greatest problem is that we refuse to die. We all refuse to die. And I don't just mean in a final breath, get put into a casket way. I mean that we refuse to die every day. That's the idea in this new series that we're going to be starting today. And I promise it will make sense soon. So we're starting the series today. And the series has the word death in the title. Doesn't seem like the best PR move, right? Like, people don't like death. They don't like thinking about death. They don't like talking about death. We're afraid to die. So why do a series with the word death in the title? Why talk about death? Well, because Jesus did. Jesus actually talked about death kind of a lot, most often about his own death. He kept telling people that he came to earth to die, that he would die so that others could live. And Jesus just didn't seem to have any fear of death. On several occasions, people had actually tried to kill him. And then there was this one day. Jesus got word that one of his friends, a guy named Lazarus, who lived in an area called Judea, was sick. He was dying. And so finally, Jesus says to his little posse of friends and followers called the disciples, he says, we're going to put all the Bible verses on the screen. In John 11:7, it says, finally, he said to his disciples, let's go back to Judea. But look at how Jesus' followers, his disciples, respond. Verse 8. But his disciples objected. Rabbi, they said, only a few days ago, the people in Judea were trying to stone you. Are you going there again? They were like, Jesus, the last time you were in Judea, people tried to kill you. We think we should just stay here. We like things predictable, manageable, and free of death. Free of death is a good thing. So from this fearful group erupts this chorus of voices, all asking Jesus, please don't go and don't let us go. But then speaks one voice out in dissent, a disciple named Thomas. Look what he says in verse 16. Let's go to and die with Jesus. Now, I love that. I think what Thomas is saying is, guys, it's better to die with Jesus than to live without him. I think he's saying, listen, Jesus is here to die for us. We need to be willing to die for him. I love that, but it also makes me curious. What led Thomas to say this? What even gave him the idea? Well, to answer that question, we need to kind of go back. In fact, we're going to start out way back. So Jesus had always existed in heaven as God with God, but he came to earth and he was born and he lived a human life. Jesus spent the first 30 years of his life in relative obscurity, but then at the age of 30, he announces to people who he really is, that he is God come for us. He is God in the flesh, that he was the promised Messiah, the promised Savior that people had been waiting for. And he starts, as he announces this, he starts offering this invitation to people. He invites them to come and see, to come and see. Like in John chapter 1, verse 39. Jesus said, come and see. So he started out by asking people to come and see because, well, he had to. I mean, really, that's all he could ask of someone who had never met him, who didn't know anything about him. All he could do with someone like that is invite them to investigate. Perhaps that's kind of where you are this morning. Maybe you're kind of new to this church thing and Bible thing and God thing. You really don't know Jesus or much about him. And if so, Jesus would invite you to come and see, to find out who he is and what he's like. And you can do that. You could come and see by coming back to Verve. The series is 4 weeks long. You could be like, you know what? I'm going to come for all 4 weeks. I'm going to come and see. You could also do that by reading the Bible. So the book we just looked at was in the book of John. And in a second, we're going to look at some verses in the book of Mark. John and Mark would be great Bible books for you to read to get to know Jesus, to come and see. And if you do do that, you will see. So Jesus starts out by inviting people as he announces who he is to come and see. But soon, over time, the invitation he offers to people changes. Why? Because people had come and people had seen. And what they saw was extraordinary. They saw Jesus and they realized that Jesus loved like no other. He loved people no one else would love. And Jesus taught like no other. He had wisdom that was like not of this world. And Jesus had power like no other. He was able to do miracles proving his divinity. Jesus had compassion like no other. If there were hurting people, Jesus was there to help them. And as people came and as people saw, he went from having a few curious onlookers to having thousands of committed followers. And Jesus starts offering a different invitation. Look at Mark chapter 8, starting in verse 34. Then, calling the crowd to join his disciples, he said, if any one of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way. take up your cross and follow me. If you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake and for the sake of the good news, you will save it. So Jesus offers this invitation to this crowd of people. He says, take up your cross. What did he mean by that? Well, back then, the Romans killed people on crosses. People would be tortured, and then they would be nailed naked to a cross, and they would die a very slow, very painful death. And these people who were to be crucified, they were forced to carry their own crosses to their execution. But I want to give you even a little more historical context so that you can better feel what the people in that crowd felt that day when they heard Jesus' invitation, come and take up your cross and follow me, okay? So there's another book in the Bible called Acts. And in the book of Acts, a Jewish leader makes this passing reference to someone called Judas the Galilean. This Judas, not the Judas who betrays Jesus, the famous Judas, a different one. This Judas led a revolt of zealous Jews against the Roman government. And so this Jewish leader says of him in the book of Acts, he says, Judas the Galilean appeared in the days of the census and led a band of people in revolt. He too was killed, and all of his followers were scattered. So that is the only mention of this Judas or this rebellion in the Bible. But we can learn a lot more, and we do learn a lot more about Judas and this rebellion from other historical sources from the time. By the way, that's one of the cool things about the Bible. The Bible is a book of history. It's not like somebody saying, here's what we should believe. It's history. And so you can look at other historians from the time of those of the Bible and find out, did they say the same things? And do they all sync up? And you find out they do, and they did. And so these other historians tell us a lot about this Judas the Galilean and this rebellion. This particular uprising was one of the bloodiest in Jewish history. Judas had gathered hundreds, some estimate a couple of thousand men, by capitalizing on their hatred of Rome and convinced them that he was the long-awaited Messiah. He told them that if they followed him, he would lead a rebellion straight to Jerusalem, and he would rid the Holy Land of the Romans and their power, that they would be his conquering army. So they all agree. They march into Jerusalem, where they meet the Roman army, and they are quickly cut down by the Roman soldiers. Hundreds of people in this Jewish rebellion were killed in the bloodbath. But in order to make a point, the Romans decided on a more brutal form of punishment for those who were not killed in the battle. The surviving rebels were each led to a cross on the busiest streets and intersections of Jerusalem, and they were told there by the Roman soldiers, take up your cross, follow me. So they took up their crosses, and they were forced to drag their crosses through the streets of Jerusalem in front of all the Jewish people. Finally, they were told, lay down your crosses. And then on the spot where they laid down their crosses, they were stripped, tortured, and crucified. Those zealots hung on the crosses for days until they died. And as kind of a final blow to the rebellion, the Romans would not allow their bodies to be taken off the crosses after they died. In fact, if you were caught trying to take down a body from a cross, you would be put on a cross to die next to that cross. It was Rome's way of stopping future rebellions. So the city was filled with the stench of hundreds of rotting human corpses. No matter where you went, you could not escape passing a dead rebel and be reminded of the words that had sealed their fate. Take up your cross. Follow me. For years, the skeletons of those zealots continued to hang on those crosses. Okay, so now, think about Jesus, who's addressing this large crowd of people in Mark 8. And can you imagine the emotional tension it must have created? Maybe the horror in the crowd as Jesus says, take up your cross and follow me. And the memories of seeing those men on those crosses were still fresh and new. Historians actually estimate that even up to 100 years after the rebellion, skeletons still hung on crosses along those roads. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me if when Jesus spoke this radical invitation, they were in full view of those very crosses with Jewish bones still hanging on them. Can you imagine the kind of impact that phrase, take up your cross, would have had on all those people listening? I mean, if Jesus spoke those words in full view of the remains of a skeleton on a cross after years of exposure to sun and wind and rain. So, why did Jesus choose those words? Because he was telling the truth. Many of his followers back in the Bible times would be killed because they chose to follow him. And many, in fact, more followers today all around the world in countries where it's illegal to be a Christian, they're killed today because they choose to follow him. And Jesus was warning them, and he's warning us, listen, if you choose to follow me, that means you might have to die for me. And so the question comes to us, are you willing to die for him? If your answer is no, or I don't think so, then I would just say, okay, but that means you need to come and see. You really need to come and see, because if you're not willing to die for him, I think that means you don't understand how extraordinary he is. I think it means you don't understand that he is God, and God should come before everything else, including our own lives. You don't understand that he was willing to die for you. And you don't understand that if you were to die for him, well, you would go to heaven to be with him forever. Are you willing to die for him? But listen, when Jesus said these words, he meant more than just being willing to die physically. Did you notice in Mark 8, that passage we read, he said, you must be willing to give up your own way. Take up your cross. You must be willing to give up your own way. And so what he meant was that on a daily basis, we need to be willing to die to ourselves so we can live for him. And the promise that Jesus makes is that's how you really live. That's how you really live, by dying to yourself. Now, we live in a very selfie-oriented culture, right? We are told our whole lives to look out for number one, and I'm number one, right? We are told, hey, do whatever makes you happy. Your happiness is what's important. We're told whoever dies with the most toys wins. We are told our whole lives, live for yourself. And really, no one even needs to tell us that, because being self-centered comes naturally for us, right? Did you know that research has proven that people donate more money to hurricane relief if the hurricane had the same name as they do? It's like, that's a hurricane I wanna, right? In fact, people donate more if the name of the hurricane has the same first letter as their personal first letter of their name. It's true. Being self-centered, it's just the most natural thing for us. You know where else you see this, and I know you do, is when you look at a group picture that you're in. Forever, people have taken group pictures with people who are important to them, like family and friends, and we're at some special thing. Let's take a picture together. Hey, when you look at a group picture that you are in, who is the first person you look for? Yourself, right? We can admit this together, right? And listen, if everyone else in the picture has their eyes closed, but you look good, that's a good picture, isn't it? You're like, that's a good one, right? And if everyone else looks great, but your eyes are closed, that's a bad picture. We need to delete that one. That's a bad picture, right? In fact, nowadays, we tend to take pictures with the person who's most important to us, because what we tend to take now are selfies, right? I've actually heard that there are over 1 million selfies posted online every single day. That's a lot of selfies. That's a lot of self. That's a lot of us. We take pictures of ourselves, and it makes sense because we live in a selfie world. We are selfie people. And in our selfie culture, Jesus calls us to a death to selfie. And this is actually at the core, the very core of what it means to live a life of following Jesus. Look what the Bible says in Galatians chapter 2, verse 20. It says, I have been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. It's also at the core of what it means to worship God. What does it mean to worship God? Look at Romans chapter 12, starting verse 1. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. So, what does this mean? What does it really mean to die to ourselves? Well, it means putting Jesus at the center of who we are and all that we do. Dying to ourselves means admitting that I cannot run my life better than God can run my life. It's putting God's agenda above my agenda. We no longer try to get our own way or try to get other people to look at us. Like, I can be totally okay being totally overlooked. Dying to self means that I am impossible to offend. If there's no self, then you can't offend me. It means loving God with all I am. It means really loving others because, like, I'm no longer concerned with what they can do for me. It means I stop giving unasked for advice as if I always know what's best for other people. Dying to self means dying to what we want because what we want typically benefits us, not other people. It means serving in my church instead of just expecting to be served by my church. It means choosing to say no to temptation and sin because when we sin, we are not loving God and we are not loving other people. We're just loving ourselves. It means we're no longer focused on our own effort and this life of trying. Instead, we focus on God and a life of relying on Him. It's death to always attempting to please other people who really don't even know me or love me. I don't need to do that anymore because I now find my identity in God, not in the approval of others. We die to self. We give up our lives. And Jesus makes this promise, that's how we find life. God, Jesus is not calling us to a boring, unfulfilling, you know, martyr life. No, what he's saying is, surprise, this is actually the best life there is. That is what Jesus said, and that's what I've discovered. When I actually live this way, my life is so much better. We find life by losing our rights, losing our wants, losing our agendas, and losing our obsessions. When we die to ourselves, we become free. Like, we're free from always having to get our way and free from adding more guilt and more regrets to our lives, free from always pursuing personal pleasures that only are pleasurable for a couple of minutes, free from living a life of anxiety and stress over finances, free of having to prove myself to other people. It turns out we find our lives by losing our lives. We finally live when we're finally willing to die. Here's something encouraging. People actually choose to live this way. This is not just some idealist idea that Jesus threw out there a couple thousand years ago, and then we go, that sounds cool. Like there are people who actually choose to live this way, and when they do, they find life. There's a guy named Dominique Vollant. He learned at the age of 54 that he was dying of cancer. And this new idea that he was going to die helped him to choose to really die to himself for God. He chose to move to a very poor neighborhood. He took a job as a night watchman at a factory. He got home from work every morning at 8 a.m., grabbed some food, and would go across the street and sit on a park bench. Every day, he would sit out there, and he would hang out with drifters and homeless people and old lonely men, and he would laugh with them, and he would tell stories, and he would share all of his food. He just loved them. With the love of Jesus. Finally, one day, this ragtag group of rejects asked him about himself. Who are you? We don't really know. And so he gave a short, humble description of his life. And then he told them with a quiet, gracious conviction that God loved them tenderly. And God loved them stubbornly. That he had never given up on them and he would never give up on them. And that Jesus had come for us, for rejects and outcasts just like us. One morning, Dominique failed to appear on his park bench, and the other men who saw him there every day, they grew concerned. And a few hours later, he was found dead on the floor of his small apartment in the slums. Turns out Dominique had kept a journal, and his last entry in his journal before dying, he wrote this: "All that is not the love of God has no meaning for me. I can truthfully say that I have no interest in anything but the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus. If God wants it to, my life will be useful through my word and witness. If he wants it to, my life will bear fruit through my prayers and sacrifices. But the usefulness of my life is his concern, not mine. It would be indecent of me to worry about that." Dominique Voyam died, and they buried him in a really cheap pine box, and they threw a funeral for him. Over 7,000 people showed up at his funeral. He gave up his life, and he really lived, and he helped others to really live. The guy I probably respect more than anyone else in this world is named George. George is actually a car mechanic. He's in his 50s, late 50s. He went to my church in Virginia before I moved to Las Vegas. He was just, of everyone I've ever met, full of joy. Like, if you want to see joy, like, hang out with George. He was so generous and encouraging and positive, and he had a great marriage. Like, every time I was around George, I'm like, I want to be like George. Like the goal of my life is, if I could be more like George, I'd be so much more like Jesus. George is like a close enough target for me. I want to be like George. He's amazing. Well, at one point I asked George, I said, "Hey, would you be willing to read a book a month with me? Like, we'll read a book and then we'll talk about it. We can grow towards God together." And he said, "Oh, I would like that. I'll try, but I don't know if I have time to read a book a month." I rolled my eyes, because that's what I do. I roll my eyes, and I said, "You don't have time to read a book a month." I said, "How about this? Let's go through your schedule, and I'll show you where you have time to read a book," which I had done with other people. Said, "I don't have time." And then they said, "Well, I watch TV for 3 hours a night." I'm like, "You could probably skip some TV and read a book, right?" And so George and I sat down, and George said, "Okay." He said, "Well, I work from 8 to 5. That's my work schedule, Monday through Friday." He said, "I get up at 5 a.m. every day. I spend at least my first hour just praying and reading the Bible. I need that time with God. And then I make lunch for myself and for my wife to take to work. And then I make breakfast for my wife and I, and we eat breakfast before we go off to work." I was impressed. I said, "Okay, then what do you do after work?" He said, "Well, I go home and I make dinner for my wife and I, because she doesn't get out of work till 6 and I get out at 5. So I make us dinner, and then she gets home and we eat dinner." Okay. I said, "What do you do after dinner? What do you do at night?" George explained that one night of the week, he shopped for his elderly mother. He got her groceries because she can't shop for herself anymore. And another night of the week, he leads a Bible study. And another night of the week, he had some guys that he met with who he was trying to help to grow and know Jesus better. And then another night of the week, he took his wife on a date. And I was like, "Okay. What about Saturdays, George? What do you do on Saturdays, your day off?" on Saturdays, George fixes cars for people who can't afford a mechanic, so he fixes people's cars who are in need for free. So what about Sundays, George? George said on Sundays he goes to church, and then he's part of this homeless ministry we had, and he's in charge of making sure there was blankets and clothes and tents to give to homeless people. I said, George, I don't think you have time to read a book a month. I don't think you're going to be able to do this, man. And I walked away from that meeting thinking, the guy I want to become more like, the one person in this world who I know is so full of joy and so positive, and I just think, man, if I could be more like him, that guy has chosen not to live for himself at all. He lives his life for God, and he is the most servant-hearted person I've ever met. He just has decided to pour himself out, but by pouring himself out, it's like God has filled him up. It's given him life. He hasn't lost life. It's given him life. And that's true for us. We find life by losing life. We will finally live when we're finally willing to die. People actually choose to do this. They choose to live this way. And you and I, we can live this way too. And it starts with a decision. You won't just kind of drift into this life. You have to choose it. So you choose. I choose to die. To die to myself so I can live for God. I will take up my cross and follow Jesus. It starts with a decision, but just to be clear, it's a decision we make every day. It's not like I made that decision 8 years ago when I was a kid. No, it's like a daily decision. And so I have a suggestion. You might want to try this. I've been doing this. So when I started working on this series, I decided I'm going to try something. And so I've been trying to remember to begin every single morning by saying to myself, today is a good day to die. That's what today is for. Today is a good day to die. It's just a reminder to me that this day is not about me. I decided that my life is about loving God and loving other people. And so today, it's okay if I don't get my own way. Like, I'm not about my agenda. I might have an agenda, but I'm not about my agenda. No one can offend me today. There's nothing anyone could do or say that could offend me because I've died to myself. I've given up my rights. Today, I'm going to look for opportunities. Where can I serve people? Where can I love people? Today, this day is a good day to die. And I'll tell you, every day that I actually choose to live that way is a better day. We find our lives by losing our lives. We finally live when we're finally willing to die. And that brings us back to Thomas. You remember Thomas. So Jesus says, let's go back to Judea. And all the disciples say, no, we'll die. You'll die. It's like death is waiting for us there. And Thomas speaks up and he says, no, let's go. Let's go with him and let's go die with him. It is so cool that Thomas is the one who said that. If you're familiar with the Bible a little bit, you may remember that Thomas is often called doubting Thomas, because of all the friends of Jesus, of all the disciples, it was hardest for him to have faith. He struggled the most to believe in Jesus. But of all people, Thomas is the one who's willing to die for Jesus. And I love that because I think it means of all people, even you and I can become willing to die for Jesus, even if we're people who in the past have really struggled with faith. And so, are you? Are you willing to die for Jesus? And again, I don't mean if someone were to put a gun to your head. That's actually, I think, easier. I mean, are you willing on a daily basis, death to selfie? I mean, choosing every day, I'm going to love God more than I love myself today. I'm going to put the needs of other people above my own needs today. You can do that. With God's help, you can totally do that. The next few weeks of this series, we're going to learn how to do that because it's not easy. We're going to learn what it really looks like. We're going to get more practical, and we're going to learn why we want to, how living this death-to-selfie life sets us free in life, how it takes off pressure and gives us fulfillment, and it makes our relationships with other people so much better, and it turns our lives into an adventure. That's what Jesus promised, right? He said, take up your cross and follow me. And then he said, listen, if you try to hang on to your life, you're going to lose it. But if you're willing to give up your life for my sake, you're going to find life. And so let's learn that together these next few weeks. And let's actually try to live that together these next few weeks. So I hope you'll come back for the next 3 weeks of the series. For now, what we're going to do is give you a chance to kind of process what you heard today and decide how you're going to implement it in your life. How do you need to apply what you've heard? During this time, our band's going to play one last song and just a chance for you to kind of sit back and think about all this. And during this time, we also offer communion, which is a piece of bread and a cup of juice that's available on the candlelit tables. And it's a reminder, Jesus didn't say, hey, you have to be willing to die for me without being willing to die for us. He actually did. He was nailed naked to a cross and he died on a cross. And so we remember and we recommit ourselves to life with him and dying for him when we take communion. If you'd like to take it, you can get it during the song, bring it back to your seat, and when you're ready, you can take that. Okay? So I'm going to pray for you, and then we'll give you these couple minutes for you to pray on your own and think about what you need to do. God, I think we all have a decision to make today. Perhaps there's some of us who are like, wow, this is too much for me. I just got thrown in the deep end. I barely know much about Jesus. I don't know if I believe in Jesus. I can't be willing to die for someone I don't even know if I believe in. Yeah. And so I think the decision is come and see. This is too important to ignore. And so come and see. Come back for the next 3 weeks. Read the book of Mark or the book of John and see who Jesus is. Really is. God, I pray that some of us make that decision today. But others of us, we have come and we have seen and we believe, but it's very easy to believe in you, but not be willing to take up our cross and follow you. And so today, maybe we need to make a decision. Jesus, I am choosing to give up my life so I can have life with you. I will take up my cross and I will follow. God, help us because it is not easy. But we want to find life, not lose it. We pray all these things in Jesus' name.